This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Baseball Outside the Box. This is the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and want to welcome everybody in the U.S. and around the world. We have a tremendous audience, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. First of all, let me wish you a happy new year. Hope you had a great Christmas with your family and friends. That is so important. That is why we took a break to be with our family and friends, because we believe family comes first before anything, even business. So we took a break, had a great time with our family, and kind of got rejuvenated. Along the period that we took off a little bit, we took our 15U baseball team down to Dominican Republic for competition, training, education, and a great cultural experience. You got to try it. If you're a player coach, join us somewhere around the world. Just let me know if you're interested, and we'll connect you with the right people. We want to thank all of you for listening to the podcast in 2018. You made us a tremendous show. Because of you, we're able to increase our audience because you spread the word. During our break, we also wanted to get educated. We went to the American Baseball Coaches Convention in Dallas. Proudly say it's my 36th in a row. Thank God. God has kept me healthy, and that means I was able to attend 36 conventions. This convention was a blockbuster. 6,500 coaches, great exhibitors, great speakers, new technology. You've got to attend next year. The ABCA will be in Nashville. Do not miss it if you're in the game of baseball, not only for education, but also for networking. There's great, great people. They love to share what they know about baseball and their knowledge. We took some time off to prepare for 2019, our podcast. We think it's important. All our shows, all our guest speakers, we've lined up. We're going to do some special things this year. So I hope you continue to listen to the show that questions a lot of things that we do in Game of Baseball, so that way we can all get better. Like to announce one thing for 2019. We will have a special edition of Baseball Outside the Box, specifically geared to our volunteer baseball coaches. You know how important I believe our volunteer baseball coaches are. They are the foundation of our sport in the U.S. and around the world. You grow the game that way. You keep kids in the game. You're so important, because without you, we don't keep kids in the game. So we're going to have a special edition. Won't be long, probably a 15-minute episode every week, just to give you some helpful tips on working with your young players and making sure that you're having fun with them. And we're also going to videotape all our shows live on social media and on YouTube. So that way, if you can't listen to on podcast, or you happen to be on social media, you can catch it right away. And lastly, I've got to thank the Illinois High School Baseball Coaches Association. You have bestowed upon me an honor that I never thought I would receive by allowing me to be in your Hall of Fame. I am so humbled by what you have presented to me. I'll be inducted January 26th here in Chicago. Again, a special thank you to all the high school coaches in Illinois. Some are great friends. For the ones I've never met, thank you. And for the board of directors that nominated me, thank you. I look forward to that very, very special evening. And today, we're going to start with our first 2019 show, and it's going to be a very good one. We're honored to have a special guest. It's going to be pretty basic, if in your view, but not in mine, and it's going to be on movement patterns and core strength, how important they are. The guest is Dr. Kevin McGowan of PerfectMotionSportsTherapy.com. He's the author of the upcoming book on movement. You'll be seeing that out. We'll have that in our show notes. He's the founder of McGovern Physical Therapy Associates, 2004 winner of the PT Practice of the Year, awarded by his peer vote from Advance Magazine, the inventor of GAME. He'll explain what GAME is. Graded Active Movement Exam, the most comprehensive movement exam on the market. 94 graduate of Northeastern University, 2006 graduate of Simmons College with a doctorate in physical therapy degree. Dr. McGovern has treated over 1,000 patients over 26-year career, including athletes from MILB, NCAA, NAIA, USA Women's Hockey, 2008 Olympic Judo, which will be interesting, the WWE and Bellator Fighting Championships. So he has worked with many different sports. So this is going to be a great, great talk. Very interesting. Get your notes out, get your pen or your tape recorder, whatever you need to make sure you remember all this, and sit back, relax, and listen to the show. Welcome, Dr. Kevin McGovern. How you doing, doctor? Hope everything's well. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Everything's well with me. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on because, you know, this is a most important topic that I believe needs to be out there with our, you know, for our coaches, players, and parents to really understand. And I want to thank our good friend Jason Espido, I know, does work with you. Just saw Jason at the American Baseball Coaches Convention with over 6,500 coaches there, all of us trying to get better when it comes to education so we can bring some of the best stuff to all our players, parents, and coaches out there. So let's do this, doctor. Let's start with, tell us just a little bit about you as far as what you're doing right now, what you practice. I know it's been over 24 years, and I did the intro. But tell us what your main focus is right now, especially with baseball.
Yeah, so basically I'm really focusing on keeping athletes, especially baseball players, healthy and performing well. I kind of describe myself as the parking garage guy. You can't really build a building unless we have a good foundation or a good parking garage. And that's what I do. I really start to hone in on someone's basic human movement. Because I kind of say that movement's math. It's a math equation. If it starts off wrong, it can never be right, no matter what the finished product looks like. So that's really what I'm honing in on, it and getting people better that way.
You know, and the movement of obviously our body is extremely important. And where does a coach, I know they can contact you, and we're going to have on the show notes everything at perfectmotionsportstherapy.com. You're also on Twitter at KMcGovernPT. But where does a coach, you know, begin to understand this if they really want to get into it?
You know, there's so much information out there that it's, you know, my website's a great tool. I'll always speak to somebody about it. But I think the health provider is someone that's lacking in the field of sports. You know, they trust us to fix when someone's injured, and no one goes back on the field without being cleared by a health provider. But it seems like we're not kind of in the space to treat the healthy for some reason. So I want to prevent injury and make people healthier and perform better by fixing their movement, because everyone has poor movement or I wouldn't have a job. So, you know, we take that poor movement and we do something with high velocity or high intensity. It's really just a matter of time before someone gets hurt.
All right, so let's go right at it. Let's talk about the number one thing out there. You know, we've talked about it on the show with some other experts, and the number one thing, you know, that we see in baseball right now is, you know, arm injuries. You know, explain to us, you know, the body, arm injuries can occur. You know, I'm sure it's not a perfect science, but to reduce the injuries, where do we start?
Well, again, it's really about the sequence of movement. You know, and I kind of just use another sport to kind of compare. You know, there's not too many Tommy John injuries and shoulder injuries in the sport of tennis. You know, they mm-hmm. serve the ball 700-800 times a week, because tennis, if you accelerate the racket from behind your head, the ball is going to leave the stadium. Mm-hmm. You know, and pitching, what happens is people start to accelerate their arm from behind their head, which really violates the science of kinesiology, where it's kind of spine, arm, elbow, hand. The extremities have to be the last in the equation, not first.
Now, doctor, where does strength fall into this when it comes to movement patterns? You know, how do they work hand in hand?
Sure. You know, when you came home and you saw a little picture of an ultrasound of a little baby, you saw a head and the spinal cord. And that's how we develop, and that's how we need to move from the spinal cord out. So when we talk about strength, it's really core strength, because that's where we generate our power. I know there's a lot of things out there working, and we talk about arm strength, but at the end of the day, the rotator cuff is designed to slow the body or the arm down. So we're really, if we're working specifically on the rotator cuff, we're really perpetuating deceleration. And of course, we need deceleration so the arm doesn't, you know, come out of the socket and hit the guy in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really about the sequence of it, of when we accelerate the arm. And in my opinion, we need to accelerate the arm after the core is turned, after the leg is down, the trunk is turned, and we still have the ball. Kind of like a martial artist would break, some ice or some wood. You know, he or she's not accelerating it from behind their head. They're turning their body and they're going straight downhill. And that's where I see the differences in my opinion.
And now when you talk about movement patterns, I know you have your background's in this. How are you assured that the movement patterns that are occurring, are these assured through high-speed cameras? How did you determine that these are the proper movement patterns? Because, you know, being at the baseball convention, you know, everybody has different ideas how the pitching motion is or throwing motion works.
Sure. I use some video. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, when you do a activity, anything, you should be stronger after doing it. So I do a lot of immediately after muscle testing. And if someone's arm is weak in the same position before they started, that movement pattern was wrong. If they are stronger, we continue to perpetuate that movement pattern.
So now somebody comes to you. Take us through a little bit about, they come to you, they want to get analyzed. Take us through a little bit what you do, and then do you turn them over into a pitching guy, and then they begin to work with them? You guys work hand in hand?
Sure. So I've invented a movement test that I call GAME, which stands for graded active movement exam. And it's nothing that I've reinvented the wheel. It's just the basic movement patterns of the body that I have scored, you know, squat, lunge, and a couple tests that are unique to me for the upper body. So I bring them through that. Most people do not do well because everyone has kind of movement issues, especially pitchers whose first movement really when they break their hands is to shrug their shoulders. And that's opposite of the proper movement pattern of the body. And then, you know, I give them a pitching evaluation, looking at the mechanics. I'm certainly not a Cy Young Award winner, but I think I know the biomechanics of movement pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really start on corrective exercise of getting the basics of movement. And then we can talk about, you know, sending them somewhere to a pitching coach or staying with me or going, you know, back to their school or their college. But at the end of the day, like I said, if the basics of movement are off, like if you can't do a proper squat and proper sequence, you know, how are you essentially pitching? How are you dropping and driving? There's something that your body's doing to compensate for that inability to do that. And that will come up.
Are you testing their strength in certain areas? And if yes, where are the most important areas? You mentioned, you know, the deceleration phase.
Right. So I look at the body kind of like an electrical and engineering kind of philosophy that, you know, if you and I were to build a house, the first thing we put in is the electric panel, you know, and that's essentially our spinal cord. So I test and muscle test to make sure that everything close to the spine is turned on and working properly. And 99 out of 100 times, that is not the case. You know, the glute will contract, but not in a sequential manner, meaning the glute at the bottom may contract, but not at the top closest to the spine, which would be most important, especially the shoulder blades. You know, the muscles of the shoulder blades are vital for throwing. You know, when you lift your arm up, your shoulder blade should actually turn down and depress. I mean, that's at a 3-to-2 ratio. So for every 3 degrees my arm comes up, my shoulder blades should turn down so they don't impinge. Yet we're taught to kind of, you know, we break our hands to shrug, like I said, and that's, like I said before, that's opposite of how we need to move. And that's why there's so many shoulder injuries. We're violating the basics of kinesiology.
Yeah. So there has to be some drills that, you know, whether it's by you or whether it's by a pitching person who understands the bio movements, there has to be some drills that you incorporate in your process. I know we're on a podcast, but can you explain maybe one or two drills that you can do to kind of help you do that?
Yeah, the first and most important is to work on that scapular depression, which is, you know, essentially I have people lie on their back and take, and I kind of use the analogy of taking their shoulders and putting them in opposite back pockets to kind of squeeze down and back. Mm. And literally to do that religiously and hold for 5 seconds, hold for 20 seconds, and stand in line at the grocery store and hold it. Because that is the that promotes the natural movement of the shoulder. You know, and the other one at the end of the day is a perfectly done squat. And unfortunately, we did great squats up until we were about 4 years old. I mean, if you see a toddler, they're, you know, diapers to heels in a perfect motion every single time. But as we get taller and older and are coached out of some of these movements, that's where injury comes from.
Yeah, you hear a lot about squats. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah. So, I mean, the worst advice ever given. Mm-hmm. In the history of the world is when you're getting down to the ground to bend your knees first. Horrible. Because that essentially skips a joint, kind of like electricity. You can't skip a plug. So that skips our hip and our glute. You know, the real advice is to move your rear end back first. As soon as you bend your knees before your glute comes back, you cut the power down tremendously.
You know, that's interesting because I know, you know, baseball is a very traditional sport. And myself also starting off a baseball school 35 years ago, I remember our instructors, you know, without having the knowledge of the science and the kinesiology background, I remember, you know, instructors and even me teaching it saying, you know, when you feel the ground ball, you know, make sure that you bend your knees so your body goes down. But that's a great point. So you mean your butt has to go out first and then the knees bend?
Correct. And it just has to start it first. It just has to go. But if we skip that, yeah, we're in trouble. Knees trouble, lack of power, all that kind of stuff that would come into that. And it's amazing when we talk about testing strength, I do like a live drill where I have someone kind of check their swing and I push against it. And then I have them get in the batter's box the exact same way. I push them over with like one hand, have them get in the batter's box again, but move their rear end first, then their knees, be in the exact same stance, then check their swing, and I can't even move them. I can do push-ups against the bat. It's kind of a cool live demonstration.
Absolutely. Great demonstration, coaches and players and parents. If you just heard, you know, what a demonstration that you can, you know, prove the kids, you know, why, how important the glutes are and how important the squats are to work on. What about, you know, this is, since you bring that up, a great point. What about young kids, you know, starting at 8 years old, 10 years old, 11, you know, when you're talking about squats, what do you recommend they do with weights and all that?
You know, I'm a very big proponent of Olympic lifting and weights if done absolutely correctly. And that's, we see that kind of few and far between. You know, I see people who, you know, will say I can bench or I can squat 300 pounds and they do a squat and I push them over with one finger in a live demonstration. A younger kid has a better chance to improve their movement because they're still developing and they're still developing good habits. The problem I see with, you know, the little league age person is that they're not outside playing and, you know, they're in front of the video games and in front of their phone and no one's playing outside learning and developing those movements. So sometimes, especially when they hit a growth spurt, they're very, very awkward. And you really have to hone in on the basics of movement. Like I said, the parking garage, we can't do anything without a good foundation of movement.
Sure.
Whether you're 8 or 100.
Mm-hmm. And as you were talking, when we were talking about fielding, it just came up. I was thinking, you know, when you talk about being strong in the right area, you know, one of the most difficult skills for young kids, which you can see across the board, across the world, when fielding a ground ball, because we'll talk about different skills, when fielding a ground ball is the ability to lower the center of gravity correctly. And that's an instant result of lack of strength and flexibility.
That is correct. And it's more, you know, stability than flexibility, in my opinion, because, you know, the extremities are there and the muscles that connect to the spine to protect the spine, because without that, those guys don't move. So I've done a lot of work in the past few years of non-stretching, especially the lower extremities, because I can, again, in live, you will see if I have someone really activate their glute for 5 or 10 minutes, their hamstring stability or flexibility goes through the roof. because your muscles of the lower extremity especially are tight to protect the spine that's not moving correctly, kind of like you would strap a building that might be swaying or been damaged or something. You'd strap it, and that's essentially what the leg muscles do. That's why they're chronically tight. You'll see runners stretch forever and not gain any flexibility because they don't have the core stability and strength to support their frame.
Now, I know this has been out there quite a bit as I travel the world and talk to coaches and work with coaches, but I'm not sure it's out there enough because you still see it. So I'd like for you to explain it. Prior to a practice, prior to a game, you know, there's a lot of stretching going on. You know, we talk about dynamic stretching, then they use the word static stretching. Can you explain what needs to be done for baseball prior to a game so that way, you know, the correct muscles are being used in a proper way? Can you explain what's the best type of workout prior to a game so you're ready for that explosive movement?
For me, it's very simple. Back to the scapular depression exercise where they're on their back and squeezing their shoulder blades. I've literally had pitchers do that and then get right on the mound and throw a pitch because that really is where the motion starts, and there's no need to waste time with warm-up pitches because essentially we move again from proximal to distal. And then the squat in varying different, you know, off the bench, off the stands, at a good pace, at a slow pace, varying the pace. And that's it. Those two movements are key because they're right, again, close to the fuse box or the spinal cord to move out. If those are off, you can warm up all day. But if those aren't engaged, there's going to be something that eventually will occur.
So if you've got a lot of exercises as a coach, let's say you have a 10-minute warm-up, 15-minute warm-up, and you've got different movements that you're constantly moving, you know, to warm up, the key is to make sure that these two are being done along with them.
Yeah, and I would argue that really what other movement doesn't come into play with those two movements, the squat and the depression of your shoulders. Uh-huh. Everything, hitting, fielding, throwing, you know, all those movements are the basics of those two movements. The squat and scapular depression are the beginning of the equation of every single movement in every sport I can think of.
Which means if we've got practice organization, I mean, we could reduce some time because, you know, I know, you know, teams that are warming up for 20 minutes prior to even throwing a baseball or even doing anything.
Right, right. I mean, not to say that we cut down the warm up. You know, it's good to kind of get the heart rate going. But when we're talking about, you know, I see a lot of different warm ups, these, you know, scissor kicks and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's all well and good. But if we stop the player right there and they can't do a squat and I can push them over with one finger, how are they fielding a ball correctly in the correct kinesiological sequence to do it at the most power available to the body and without hurting themselves?
All right. Let's talk about, that's fantastic. Let's talk about, you know, for our coaches and players and parents around the world and all over the U.S., when it comes to pitching and all the injuries that are occurring. Okay. I think we understood the part about the deceleration, the proper movement patterns. What's a young coach to do to try to make sure that, you know, throughout the year, is there too much pitching going on? Is it too much throwing? Where do you think these injuries are starting?
In my opinion, it's poor mechanics at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Poor mechanics and poor movement, because I think we could throw every day if it's done correctly. If you don't accelerate the ball and your arm until you are essentially with gravity downhill, I mean, you're cutting injuries down. I mean, I don't know numbers, but tremendously. I mean, you can take a ball and slam it to the ground all day and you're never going to hurt your arm. But when you accelerate it again from behind your head, injuries are just a matter of time. I mean, in the major leagues, I mean, what in the World Series, what do the starters average? Three and a half innings? Less innings are happening and more injury. You know, when I talk in front of groups, you know, we have all this training going on and we have about 10 major league outfielders that can throw to home plate on the fly from their outfield position. There should be 100, right? Tommy John rehab should be 8 months, not 2 years, because Tommy John came back in a year or so, and then Pitchley was 47. That was 1975. So there's something that's not going on that's producing results, you know. And I'm just trying to kind of help people along to, here's my opinion on this, and see if we can get some better results coming from a world of fixing injury, you know, and now working with the healthy.
Especially nowadays that, you know, velocity is so, you know, I don't know, it's really been promoted out there, you know, that velocity is the most important thing, or maybe misrepresented, because, you know, I know a lot of coaches believe that, you know, control and velocity need to be worked on. With all the velocity going on, I'm assuming, you know, with the lack of preparation, you know, when it comes to movement patterns, when it comes to strength, that's one reason there's got to be some more injuries, because guys are throwing harder and the body can't handle it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if trained correctly or if moving correctly, you know, the chance of injury is less. You know, I don't know about the long term of throwing 100 miles an hour for 10 years. But then again, how many guys are lasting that long in Major League Baseball? You know, you'll see a guy get, you know, I just look at like Tim Lincecum and all these, you know, Johan Santana that, you know, 8-9 years and they're gone. You know, the days of maybe Roger Clemens and Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux may be gone. You know, the 15-to-20-year pitcher may not be around anymore. I don't know.
Doctor, what's your protocol for young coaches, you know, that have, you know, that have kids all year round? What should they be looking for when it comes to, you know, there's a possible injury coming about, or, you know, when the kid's pitching, you know, if something's off, you know what, because, you know, there's times where you're going to have to take them out of the game. There's times where maybe they're pitching too many pitches in that inning, whatever it may be, but the human eye needs to see something. The coach needs to understand it. What's some of your protocols you give, you know, some advice you might give the coaches?
The biggest thing is to have the kid be honest, you know, and make sure that he tells the coach, or you establish a relationship that, you know, look, you got to be transparent here, because the four-letter word we've got to key in on is pain. Anytime we throw a pitch and it hurts, there's something wrong. You don't like throw through pain ever. You don't say, well, I'll throw another one. Anytime the arm is stiff, they've got to shut it down. They've got to come out of the game and get it looked at. Someone is in the little league age who's, you know, after a day of rest, if their arm is still stiff, you got to get that looked at, because kids recover quicker. You know, you and I go throw three innings right now, we might not go out of bed for a week. So it's kids recover faster. So if things are lingering on, you've got to get looked at. You know, I tell parents, look, you can't get a college scholarship at 12, but you can certainly lose one if they get injured and they need surgery or their arm is hurt.
Absolutely. And you're seeing more and more, as you look at social media, we see more and more young kids getting hurt early on. You know, now we do have some players that do listen, and it's also good for coaches to understand it. You know, sometimes it's tough, you know, as a coach or as a player, I should say, sometimes it's tough to understand the difference between pain and soreness. Maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, soreness is something that happens after the activity, in my opinion. You know, like you play basketball that day, you know, your back's a little sore the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that's happening in the game moment is not good. So that's the four-letter word of pain, that they've got to shut it down, come out of the game at that point. And then when we talk about soreness, you know, we got to look at how long that's lasting. You know, if after pitching, you know, 4 or 5 innings the next day, it's taking you 5, 6, 7 days to recover, there's something going on. It's just not, the straw hasn't broken the camel's back yet, but it's close. So that's, we got to get that looked at. You know, you should be able to, you know, be, you know, sore for a day, and the next day you should be able to throw without soreness or pain at the end of the day, if we're throwing essentially from our core and not really using our arm. That's the last conduit that we use to direct the ball.
And that's the key. You said the key word in your core, and you mentioned that, you know, kids recover faster. Interesting. Maybe explain that. And then if you can also give us some ideas of how to recover, or if it just happens naturally, do you not do anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're talking about a kid, you know, kids can, I mean, nowadays these AAU programs, I mean, just look at basketball, they're playing 3 and 4 games a day and the next day they're jumping around. So, you know, as we get, we're younger, we just like a, we're a brand new car. As we get older, we start to get, you know, rust, which I call arthritis, and it takes longer to recover.
Yeah, I've got you that.
Me too. So we talk about, you know, right after the event, the pitching event, you know, we can throw some ice on it. You know, the next day I like to use maybe some heat or, you know, a hot shower and just, you know, do the scapular depression exercise, do your normal stuff in between your pitching performances, and you should be good. If we're doing the right movements all the time, the chance of injury is going to decrease tremendously. If we're doing wrong movements, then we're talking about, like I said before, the soreness that's lingering, and then at that point, you need to go and get it checked out.
And after you pitched, well, you know, it's okay to the next day to start playing a little catch, or maybe wait a day. What's your recommendation there? Again,
yeah, I mean, you can do some. I obviously can play catch. You know, another exercise I like to do for pitchers is really to shoot free throws. You know, to get that arm up and extended, and you know, I know it's a different sport, but I know a lot of guys throw footballs around. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a basketball guy to really kind of, you know, even get underneath the basket and just try to, you know, shoot a free, like a big looping arc free throw will also help to promote good movement. Cause you know, your elbows at your side and we're, you know, elbows into the side, shoulders down, and we're promoting good movement in a free throw.
Well, you know, I like that. That's interesting because it raises the elbows above the shoulder a little bit. Gotta ask you this because, you know, if I don't ask, I'm not doing my job here, and love to get your opinion on this because it's so out there and there's so many different things about it. Weighted balls.
I knew it was coming.
You knew it was coming. It had to come because, you know, I've done shows on this. There's different opinions. 25 years ago, I actually started, heard a gentleman on stage talk about it and, you know, started working with it. Then I started thinking, well, wait a second. You know, it's great I got weighted balls. And I'm seeing velocity increase, but I'm not a doctor. I'm not a biomechanical person. You know, what am I doing to the body, even though the velocity is increasing? So I know it could be a whole show on this, but I'd love to get your opinion on this.
Sure. And this obviously comes from someone who's done, you know, haven't done any research. There's no formal study.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we generate movement from the core. Okay. We have got a spinal cord. We go out to our nerve endings that connects to our hands and our arms. It has to start there and move out last to the hands and arms and shoulders. So with that kinesiological viewpoint,
mm-hmm.
We're working distal. We're working at what I would call the plug, and we're trying to promote power. Some people will say that you're getting power from your arm. I'm saying you get power from your core, just like you would hit a baseball, just like you'd hit a golf ball. It's not coming from your arms or extremities. So when we put a weighted ball in our hand, you know, are we increasing speed at first? Yeah, sure, because just like we'd swing a bat with a donut on it. But long term, at the end of the day, the rotator cuff is designed to slow the arm down. So when we're accelerating something from behind our head, like I see some of these videos, and throwing this weighted ball, I cringe it sometimes. Now, people will go, I'm crazy, or, you know, like you said, there's a line drawn in the sand. I just wouldn't personally use them. I would rather someone hit a heavy bag and get that kind of power, because, you know, like a karate master throws punches, because, or Bruce Lee with the 1-inch punch, because that's essentially where the power comes from, and it streams right out to the tips of our fingers, starting at the core.
Now let me throw
just
this
difference in philosophy.
Yeah, and I understand that. Let me throw this at you. Let's say a player is, the movement patterns are pretty good, the core strength,
yep.
which has been tested pretty good, so their yep. movement as far as release, where the release in the ball is good, and now you incorporate possibly different weights, you know, not too heavy, but different weighted balls. You think there's a benefit there?
Great question. So when I talk and teach about this, I use the analogy of a towel. You know, we're having a towel fight. I'm whipping the towel, and
mm-hmm.
you've got the towel that's been in the car that's frozen all day, and I've got the one that just came out of the dryer, and you know, which one's going to be faster. When we hold something in our hand, especially something that's weighted, we're going to get tension, because if not, we're going to drop the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I want the arm to be as loose and freely moving as possible and act as a whip when that core turns and that arm whips down. Holding that ball is going to increase tension, you know, through my hand, through my elbow, up into my shoulder. So it's counterintuitive for what I'm trying to get the person to do. But like I said, there's a line in the sand. You know, I can kind of give you an explanation of how I, you know, of how the body should work, but you know, I'm sure there's 1,000 opinions on that. This is just mine.
Mm-hmm. You know what? And I'm going to leave it with one more thing when it comes to the weighted balls. Let's just try to see if we can figure this out. What do we say to the coaches, players, and parents out there that are on some of these programs and they're seeing an increase in velocity, and then they're saying, well, you know, Joe's doing it and he's getting better and I'm not, and I'm not getting any better. What do we tell them?
So I would be looking for the four letter word again. What, you know, what they're not telling you or maybe hiding or whatever is, you know, is their arm sore after?
Mm.
You know, does it hurt for them to do it? If something is hurting you, your body's telling you to stop. Now, if it's not hurting and they're increasing velocity and they're safe and it's working for them, you know, I'm not gonna tell someone no, but I don't want to see them in my office 3 months down the road with a shoulder or elbow injury. And that's not saying it's weighted balls. There's all different factors to that.
Sure.
But listen to your body. Don't worry about the number. If it hurts, that number is eventually going to go away. You know what I mean? So that 92 with the weighted ball or whatever you're throwing after, if your arm is sore and it's hurting you much quicker into a game than it did before, you know, you got to look at what you're doing, you know, just like, you know, the long toss. Is long toss really helping? You know, I know that's a hot topic,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, outfielders throw long toss every single day. I just don't see the result of guys with cannons for arms anymore. So, you know, that's what I'm wondering, you know, it's really coming from the core. Are we too arm focused? Would be my challenge. Are we looking at, you know, hand, arm, elbow, shoulder? When, again, it's coming from the core. Are we too arm focused? Because I don't hear anyone really talking about, only a few people are really talking about the power of the core. You know, how many pitchers, adolescents, 12 to 15, can really do a one-legged partial squat to throw the ball to home plate? They can't. They end up drifting, and that arm stand is hanging behind them because of the lack of coordination, because they're growing and they don't have the really sound coordination to do the movement.
Well, I'll tell you what, I really appreciate you bringing that up and talking about it. Like I said, we all know it's a hot topic, and you know, I love that the words you use, listen to your body. I also want to get into the core a little bit, and I want to tell you that, you know, my question about long toss is, you know, nobody's ever been able to show me any research or anything about long toss, you know, that why it improves your arm. Now, you know, I've got many people that have told me it does improve my arm, and I've used it a lot and improved my arm, and that's great. But I really like, you know, the core, and I'll tell you why, because I spent a lot of time in Japan. And in Japan, if you take a look at their players, right, you see core strength, you see quad and hamstring strength, just way beyond anybody else that I've ever seen in the world. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the core. You mentioned a few exercises. Give our coaches some core strength exercises when it comes to pitching, hitting, or anything else that they can do.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to go back to the original two.
Sure.
If we master those, you know, and you can do squats at different depth. You can do a quarter, stand up, a half, stand up, all the way down, tap the bench, stand up.
Mm.
Though everyone's like, I need all these exercises. No, you really need two. You know, I took a kid,
interesting,
a guy who plays at St. Bonaventure. I took him who, you know, said he squatted like, you know, 325, pushed him over with one finger, fixed his squat. He went up to 400 pounds correctly. And that's all just, you know, putting in the foundations of movement. Your body is an amazing tool. You talk about being in Japan. I'm a Kempo karate person, blue belt. You know, that's when I started martial arts is when I really started to see how the body can do amazing things with the smallest of movements and the perfection of movement. You know, and that's kind of, I became a much better physical therapist. I owe that to my teacher, Chris Hall, who's in North Carolina. A shout out to him. And he really taught me about how to generate power and from just subtle movements that are just, you know, because everything with Kenpo is a circle. You know, we talk about the core, just turning. And the power of that turn will deliver a bat to a ball at amazing power and the arm to home plate with amazing velocity. And that's kind of the foundation of how I teach and how I want people to move. Because like you said, being in Japan, those players, and from what I have read, I just started to kind of look into that, their incidence of Tommy John and other injuries are way down compared to American players.
Yeah, and one of the reasons, you know, they've always told us, you know, that their movement patterns, when you look at them, are really, really good. I mean, the best in the world, in my opinion. You know, and they just... You know, they're not looking for just, you know, anything or a little secret to help them. They're perfecting movement patterns is what they're doing. And they do it better than anybody in the world. And like I said, you know, you can just tell. I mean, when I work with them, their core area is so strong, their hamstrings, quads, you know, it's almost like they spend more time than we do in working on something. You know, they don't work on 10 things at once. And that's why I'm glad you brought that up. Here's two exercises you're promoting. And you're also promoting movement patterns and core strength. And you're keeping it very simple, but yet very important.
It is very simple at the end of the day. Like we get all caught up in it doing, you know, less is always more. We're caught up in doing all these things. Like I say, you know, I'm the parking garage again. You're working in the penthouse. The penthouse is beautiful. It's great. Nice. It's all great and fancy. But it's eventually going to come crumbling down if that parking garage isn't sound and stable.
Absolutely. And I noticed on your Twitter, and guys, you can go at KM, that's capitalized KMC, capitalized G, govern, PT. We'll have it on our show notes. He's on Twitter. He's got some great examples on Twitter also. I noticed getting into some visualization stuff also with some of the pictures. You know, it's unique. It's interesting. Maybe explain that.
Yeah, so, you know, I started to do again with the martial arts training of doing things with my eyes closed, because at the end of the day, our eyes are there, obviously, to see, but they're there for what's known as, if people I'm sure have heard of, fight or flight, you know, so protecting the body. Am I under attack? Am I in a, you know, so your eyes and connect directly to your brain are working at a gazillion times a second, essentially at the end of the day, protecting the body. And sometimes we get into these movement patterns that we just can't fix, you know, because the brain is like a cookie on a computer. It just has it there. We say a word and it's going to do the same thing no matter what we try to do. So I really have people kind of like close their eyes, relax, breathe, and be able to do the movement. So, you know, my pitchers that I work with, pretty much from about 45 feet off flat ground, I want them to hit, you know, target 8 out of 10 times with their eyes closed.
At that point,
if you can throw the ball with your eyes closed, imagine what you can do with your eyes open. And I do with hitters too, the same thing of just getting people to relax and feel the movement, because at the end of the day, I'm not there all the time. So you've got to be able to feel what you're doing to be able to self-correct. Then you have the true muscle memory down. Because everything's not going to be perfect, but you can be like, you know what? Yep, I over-rotated, or I didn't, you know, whatever the self-correction is, they know it and they can fix it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I brought up social media and I brought it up for a reason, and I just thought of this. You know, they call it social media. Sometimes it's not very social. But, you know, when you're on social media, you know, I'm sure you get questions and then you kind of interact with people. What's some of the things that, some of the questions you might get that you felt were important kind of to address with our audience when it comes to social media?
I kind of got attacked a couple months ago about pronation. You know, so for people at home, pronation is essentially if you extend your arm out and you turn your hand down like you're dribbling a basketball, that's pronation.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, I didn't make this up, it's in a book. When you're in pronation, you're weaker, okay? Because pronation is essentially the flexion pattern of the body. And what I mean by that is, if you've ever seen someone who, God forbid, has had a stroke or a polio, you know, their arms are bent up, to, or just the fetal position. That's the flexion pattern of the body. And that's what I call caveman brain level. Not intelligence, just that the body goes to that because it's lower brain function. The extensor part of the body is supination. My hands are up to the ceiling or down at my side facing forward, and I'm up and nice and tall. That's higher brain function. That's how, you know, as we begin to develop. And those are facts. I'm not making that up. When you throw a ball in pronation and you take it out of your glove and it's pointed to the ground, first of all, you can't throw a ball like that. Eventually it has to supinate. So my point is, well, why are we doing that if we don't throw a ball like that? Just take in your glove and put your hand in supination. And then when it comes out of your glove, you're ready to throw. So there's not that unhinging of the shoulder. Man, I was getting attacked. Like, I didn't know what I was talking about. But at the end of the day, what I talk about, I can prove in a live demonstration that you're stronger or more flexible or whatever it is, or I wouldn't say it. At the end of the day, you're not strong in pronation. And that's just the way it is. Just because that's you're not strong neurologically. Now, in some positions of pronation with other movements of joints, are you strong? Sure, but at the end of the day, when we're talking about throwing a ball, we really want to avoid that kind of movement because you're just not strong.
So if I understand it correctly, you release the ball, that's gone, and then the pronation occurs naturally?
That's correct. But okay. What happened, you know, you'll see these guys going to dig for the ball, you know, in their glove, you know, they're looking over their glove, their elbow's abducted, they're in pronation, and they're shrugging. All bad movement patterns to do anything, to do any sport, you know, and that's, again, starting from the foundation up, immediately right then and there, nothing good is going to happen from that movement on, because we're not in a position to succeed from a kinesiological standpoint.
Sure. Now, I want to ask you this because we're getting close to the end, but at the end, what we're going to do is I'm going to open it up for anything that I particularly did not bring up that is extremely important that you'd like to address with our audience. So we'll talk about that. I see some different drills, and I want to ask you about this drill, if possibly it can be understood through a podcast. But basically it's standing, you know, like you're going to throw it to somebody, but instead of throwing to somebody, forward, they're actually going backwards and throwing it behind them. I don't know if you have a visual of that.
I've seen that, you know, and I don't really know the purpose of that, because, and there might be, and I don't know what, you know, every time we do an exercise, it should have a purpose, you know,
sure.
Purpose, you know, it should be explained to you and to the person doing it.
Yep.
And after that, there should be some test to see if they are stronger or more, whatever you're trying to test, you should be able to do it right after that exercise, not 6 weeks down the road. Right after that exercise, they should be instantaneously stronger if it's working. So I've never tried that. You know, and like I said, to me, you've got to throw last, meaning accelerate your arm downhill past, you know, 12 o'clock on the clock, you know, straight downhill. And I don't know if that drill is working on that. I'm not really sure. So I don't want to.
Yeah, no, but you bring up you bring up a great point. What I like about what you just said is, you know, make sure that if you're going to do a particular drill, you see on a video, you see on social media, understand it well, and then test it to make sure it's, you know, that you're getting a little bit stronger due to it. So that addresses it perfectly, whatever the drill may be. What about, you know, when we're talking about, you mentioned deceleration. I just want to briefly bring this up again. The deceleration part sounds like it's very important from the standpoint of holding your arm. Does it also help you throw harder?
You know, I don't know how, I don't think so per se, meaning that a lot of guys, you'll see what I call posing. You know, they look like almost like a figure skater when they're done. Back leg up in the air, arm kind of out and extended. I mean, I want my pitchers to complete the circle, that they literally throw and their arm actually hits off their torso to slow down, you know, because
great.
So, you know, I use the analogy, and if coaches want to see unbelievable results in 1 second, have someone throw a pitch and then tell them there's a folding table in front of them and a block of ice. And they've got to release the ball and smash the block of ice, and you're going to see crazy things happen. You're going to see that back hip comes through, and then arm, and they finish harder, because the body knows it. At the end of the day, it doesn't have enough power to do that, in order, unless we completely turn our core. You know, like for me, I'm a big dude. If I'm weaving my leg up in a figure skater pose, that could be 60 pounds I'm leaving back there.
Sure.
You know, that we want that pelvis and that belly button to turn as tight as we can in any sport that requires rotation to get the most power.
All right, Doc, we are at the end, so let's bring it up. I'm sure there's a couple things that there's plenty, but what's the most important things that maybe we didn't address that we want to address right now?
You know, I think we got everything. I just want to really hone in on, you have to move properly before we start to do things with velocity, things with power, because if, again, the foundation isn't correct, we're going to, one, lose performance, and more importantly for me, I don't want to see you in my office injured. You know, I want people healthy. And most of the injuries that I see has to do with poor basic human movement. And that's what I'm trying to fix.
Excellent. And I'll tell you what, I got the topic, movement patterns and core strength. I mean, that's basically the bottom line of this whole conversation we had, how important that is.
That is correct. Thank you.
All right. That is Dr. Kevin McGovern. You can check him out at perfectmotionsportstherapy.com and also on Twitter at KMcGovernPT. Check it out. We'll have it on our show notes, so that way you can reach out to him with any questions you might have. Doctor, I really want to appreciate it. Thanks to Jason Espedo, too, for recommending you. I love that you came on the show, so thank you very much. I want to wish you a Happy New Year, too.
Thank you, and Happy New Year, too.
All right, folks, thank you to Dr. Kevin McGovern. Thank you to Brian Crock, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, check us out on iTunes and Stitcher. If you love the show, give us a rating. Really helps us out. Email me anytime at petercaliendo@att.net. Again, petercaliendo@att.net. Love getting your questions, anything, any comments. Love hearing from you and love to interact. I'll get back to you right away. Don't forget, we are going to have a show next week. So we want to wish everybody in our new show a Happy New Year, a Happy 2019. Keep getting smarter, educating yourself in any way possible. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. This is Baseball Outside the Box. Have a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.